Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we have actual NBA news to discuss. The Chicago Bulls have a new vice president of basketball operations. Garpax is no more, so we will be a very special guest on to discuss what all of that means for the Bulls moving forward. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. The sun is shining and the Bulls have new leadership, which is very exciting. So I've been looking forward to getting Casey Johnson, who's on the podcast right now, to basically talk Bulls and talk about like what just transpired over the past week and a half.
And yes, we are joined today by Casey Johnson, the Bulls insider for NBC Sports Chicago. Casey, thank you for joining us. How's it going today?
It's going well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm glad to see the Bulls have been keeping you busy in quarantine. Before we get started here, can you let listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work?
I will begrudgingly offer my Twitter handle since I'm not a huge fan of the medium, but it's at KCJ Hoop, H-O-O-P, and my work is writing-wise is at NBCSportsChicago.com.
Very good. Yes. If you are a Bulls fan, I'm sure you are already following Casey, but if not, I mean, he's been pumping out great stuff about the Bulls for a while now, and they're going to be one of the more intriguing teams to follow, given all that's transpired over the past few weeks. So, Casey, I'm going to mostly defer to Mort here because he is the resident Bulls expert of the group. But I want to start with, from an outsider's perspective, a basic question because, you know, we've been doing this podcast for about 4 years now, which means Mort has been cluing me in on the Bulls fan sentiment for about 4 years. And basically, it seems like people have been calling for Garpax's head for a while now. So what changed this year to spur this overhaul at the top of the organization?
Yeah, what changed is that John Paxson came to ownership and basically initiated the need for this change. And I know the fan base is incredibly skeptical of that, but it's exactly what happened. There's zero disputing it. Now, I do believe that Michael Reinsdorf, who is the president and COO of the Bulls, might have arrived at a similar conclusion on his own. Michael, since becoming a little bit more prominent in the organization, the son of principal owner Jerry Reinsdorf, initially focused on overhauling the business side of the Bulls operations. That's his area of expertise. And he has a long track record of bringing in people from outside the organization to do that. And, you know, he's more focused now of late on the basketball side of the equation. Now, that does not mean he's involved in basketball decisions because that's not how the Reinsdorfs operate. They hire people to run basketball operations and then get out of the way. But, you know, John came to Jerry and Michael and said, you know, we're behind the times. We're a small, not modern front office. And quite frankly, I don't have the skill set to do the job that's needed anymore. And so John initiated a lot of the need for this change. And, you know, to me, this hire is significant in the sense that it's Michael Reinsdorf's first major basketball endeavor where he spearheaded this search. And it's also significant because it's the first time the Bulls have gone outside the organization to hire a basketball operations head. Jerry Reinsdorf hired Jerry Krause in 1985 and then hired John Paxson in 2003. And both those people had ties to the Bulls organization. So there's a lot of newness to this Arturis Karnišovas hire.
And Paxson will, you know, henceforth be used as a sounding board for Karnišovas. Is that correctly understood?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been pretty clearly laid out that you know, Arturis, in comments to us and also during the interview process, I reported that, you know, he conveyed to the Reinsdorfs that he views John Paxson as a resource, not a roadblock. I mean, John is not going to be around the team on a daily basis. He will have no daily presence around the team. Arturis Karnišovas is completely in charge of basketball operations. He will be making all of the decisions. How he wants to use John is up to him. You know, I think John has incredible institutional knowledge of the franchise, the city, how to communicate with the Reinsdorfs. John is very well respected around the league. He just isn't, you know, he's more of an old school executive. He doesn't, you know, press the flesh. He doesn't, you know, build a lot of new relationships. He's respected because he's honest, because he cares about the Bulls. And obviously his playing background earns him some street cred. But mostly he's respected because he's a straight shooter who doesn't try to, you know, obfuscate or pull things over on people. So, you know, I think Arturas can use John. This is just my speculation. I can't speak for Arturas, but I think he can use John sparingly and, but effectively moving forward. But make no mistake, this is Michael Reinsdorf and Arturas Karnišovas' show.
That's interesting because that is basically what fans have been clamoring for years. And, you know, like you said, there is going to be some level of skepticism just in the continued employment of Paxson. But given that he is willing to step aside and given that he was actually the one who initiated the talks of, hey, let's get a new front office in, let's actually get ahead of the times, I have to assume that that also was something that was received positively by ownership, that you actually have a vice president of basketball operations who you put the cards on the table and go, you know what, this shouldn't be my show anymore. That has to be appreciated, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Paxson Reinsdorf's relationship is so deep and so intertwined on so many levels. I mean, John has been part of the franchise on some level since 1985, and you know, the fondness and feelings that Jerry Reinsdorf has for John are undeniable. And the reason why is because Jerry Reinsdorf not only appreciates loyalty, but he appreciates directness and honesty. And anybody who knows John Paxson knows that's what he's all about. He's direct. He's honest. I've dealt with John Paxson on a personal and professional level for decades. He has never lied to me one time. And that's something that I think any owner would appreciate in an executive. So that's why John will always have a role with the Bulls. But it needs to be emphasized, he's not, you know, John initiated a lot of this need for this change. He was tired of doing the job, and he was tired of the perception that Gar Paxson was dragging the franchise down. And so he recognized that to help eradicate that perception, stepping away was the best thing. You know, I understand the skepticism around it. I've been around and covering this franchise for a long time. I know, you know, how I understand the pulse of the fan base. But anybody who knows John Paxson, and I know him very, very well, knows he's a selfless person. He's about one thing, and that is how can the Bulls get better? And in this case, you know, helping the Bulls get better is by stepping away and helping Arturas however he can.
You mentioned that Pax is a straight shooter. The word on Arturas Karnišovas is that he is as well. So I have to assume that that's a large part of why he got the job.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know Arturas very well, so I'm not going to speak authoritatively about him. I prefer to wait until I develop relations with people to speak authoritatively. I have talked to a lot of people who do know him well. I've had three conversations with Arturas in my lifetime, two of which have happened in the last few days here. But, you know, he's somebody that, you know, obviously has a lot of experience, not only on an international stage, but also on an executive level, working in two dynamic front offices, the Rockets and the Nuggets. And, you know, he's somebody that just appears to be very substantive and comfortable in his own skin. That's a kind of a theme that jumps out when you talk to people that know him well. He's clearly, you know, putting a lot of time to arrive to where he's at. So I guarantee you, and I know for a fact, because I've talked to some people that are, you know, privy to the interview process, that, you know, he was obviously very detailed and very prepared for this opportunity. And to me, it's been a pretty seamless and simplistic process.
And he kind of wasted no time. I mean, he hired J.J. Polk. Gar Foreman is now history within the Chicago Bulls organization. So he was willing to make changes right off the bat, it seems like.
Right. And I think the Gar Foreman one, you know, I understand, again, the skepticism that fans have. over these changes, but I think the Gar Forman one should maybe eradicate some of that skepticism. I don't want to speak for other people, but you're right. I mean, he came in and, you know, very quickly and bluntly and emphatically said that, you know, he had brief dialogue with Gar Forman and that he didn't see a philosophical match moving forward. So Gar Forman is out of the organization after over two decades, and John Paxson remains. So that tells me that Arturas, again, knows what he wants to do, knows what he wants to accomplish, and is already acting upon those things. I mean, I think the way that these first few days have transpired, and now obviously he's moved on to the GM portion of it, should, you know, be instructive to fans that Arturas Karnišovas is running this show, and he obviously has a plan that he wants to execute, and he's acting upon that plan.
I forgot to mention that Pat Connolly, of course, is also has also been hired. And now the search is in for a new general manager. So there are a lot of candidates currently on the table. You have Matt Lloyd, who's actually a former Bulls executive, or was at least a part of the front office. Do you know Matt on any personal level? Like, what kind of info can you give us and listeners on Matt Lloyd, who's a candidate?
Yeah, I've known Matt for a long time. I mean, he worked for the Bulls, as you mentioned. You know, I think if you speak on one person, though, he's the only one I have a strong personal relationship with. So for me to talk about that, I think might be misleading, because I don't think there is one candidate that is the leader right now. I know there's some candidates that have not been reported or mentioned to this point. What I would probably say in answer to your question is that Arturas has already kind of detailed what he's looking for in a GM. And again, this is somebody who knows what he's doing. He has relationships all around the league. He knows all these people. He knows the people that he's interviewing. He's not interviewing blind here. He has longstanding relationships with executives from all franchises. He's been in an executive role since 2008. It's probably just going to be a matter. My guess is he probably already has a leader in his mind, but I don't know who that is. What he has detailed is that he likes to not hire clones. He likes to hire people that complement his skill set, but also challenge him. So, you know, Arturas, I think, would be one who would probably agree that he's a little bit more stoic and a little bit more reserved. I do think from talking to people that know him well, once he gets to know you, he's got a lighter side and a more trusting side. But, you know, he hasn't been in a really front-facing position in his other two front office stops in Houston and Denver. So I'm going to guess here that who he hires with GM is a little bit more gregarious and maybe out front and, you know, has strong player relationships, et cetera. And I think Arturas – I don't think – I know Arturas has strong player relationships as well. But I think, you know, just somebody that can deepen those relationships would probably be one criteria he's looking for. But I think the biggest thing that I'm taking away from the GM hire is he's talked about, I don't like clones. I like people who challenge my viewpoint. And I think that's healthier. That's what you need to have in a dynamic front office. There's a lot of different opinions, a lot of different ideas. And then you talk them through and reach a consensus for your plan moving forward.
And given that he doesn't look for clones and is also looking at expanding the coaching staff and the scouting staff, rather, I would argue that that's just going to make the Bulls even more competitive in terms of like having a leg up in the front office department. Because, it has been reported numerous times over the years that the Bulls had a small staff, both in the front office department and the scouting department. And that is going to change. So for Arturas to come in and basically say, well, you know what, we're going to have different voices and we're even going to have in sheer volume even more, I have to assume that's also going to be a process. Like, Bulls fans who are excited will also have to, you know, patient themselves a little bit more, because this is going to take some time. He's not going to turn the franchise around overnight.
Right. I mean, this is still a team that, you know, sitting on 22 wins when the NBA was halted because of the COVID-19 virus. So, this is a team that's still in the throes of a rebuild that has not made much forward progress in terms of, you know, wins and losses. But I think that should also maybe give some Bulls fans some optimism, because if you look at what Arturas did as part of a collaborative front office in Denver, You know, that was a team that drafted very well, worked to retain their young talent and have continuity, and their win totals increased significantly over a four-year span from 30 to 54 in a very rugged Western Conference. So, you know, the Bulls are still mired in a rebuild. There's no getting around that. But I think everybody would agree that there are some intriguing young pieces on this roster, and it's Arturis and his staff's job now to obviously, you know, maximize that talent moving forward.
Is it fair to say that he's probably going to look more into player development than the former regime?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the former regime valued that, but I think because of how small the staff was, it wasn't executed maybe to the level that it needed to be. And, yeah, I mean, you know, one of his first hires is Pat Conley, who's known, you know, and well-regarded for player development. And I know there'll be more hires in that department, number one. And number two, it's something that Arturis has already, you know, publicly detailed that is a major point of emphasis for him. It's something he believes in. It's something the Nuggets believed in. And as I mentioned, you know, it's not just lip service. It played out in concrete results in Denver. That's one of the youngest rosters in the league, and they won 54 games in the West last year. So it's certainly an area that I think if you mix with the Bulls, you know, intriguing young pieces could maybe lead to some tangible results here in Chicago.
So let's get into the roster itself, because, you know, a lot has been said about, you know, Zach LaVine not necessarily being a guy who fits Karnišovas' perspective. Like, the word on Karnišovas is he doesn't like isolation players. He's more of like a movement offense type of player. Whereas Zach has been more of an isolation player than one you can throw into a high passing system. Having said that, though, how much of that is, you know, in terms of the perception of Zach, is him being cast into a role that might not suit his game? And do you think because of that, that Karnišovas is going to give LaVine a hard look moving forward?
I'm not big on speculation. I don't know Arturis well enough to speculate how he's going to view certain players in the roster. What I would say is what you just said is, I mean, spot on. I mean, obviously anybody who watches basketball and knows the game is not going to dispute anything you just said. That said, I mean, Zach LaVine is a borderline all-star. He was in consideration for an all-star appearance on a $19 million deal who can score 25 points falling out of bed. So stylistically, maybe he doesn't match with exactly Arturis's publicly stated vision, but you do need somebody to score the basketball, and you do need talent, and he's on a value contract right now. So I'm not going to speculate as to what Arturis is going to do with individual players in the roster. What I am going to say is that, you know, he has detailed that he's going to take time to get to know these players, and all he's got is time right now. We're all living through, obviously, in our lifetimes, an unprecedented time. And so he's going to take time to get to know these players. He's going to get time to know the coaching staff. He's going to get to take time to know every department in the franchise before he makes decisions. Right now, there is no NBA timeline. We don't know if the 19-20 season is going to be resumed. We don't know when the 20 offseason is going to begin and the draft process. We don't know if the 19-20 season pushes the 2021 start later than usual. Everything is unknown. So I know people want answers and definitive ideas or actions. There is so much unknown right now. And quite frankly, I think that can be used as a positive, because I think it gives Arturis time to, you know, make informed decisions moving forward. Clearly, he's coming to this roster with ideas. I mean, he's a respected basketball executive who's been doing this job for a long time. So I'm sure he has ideas as to what he wants to do, but until he dives in and gets to know these people and what makes them tick, et cetera, I don't think he's going to make any rash decisions. And that's why I'm not going to speculate on his view of individual players, because I quite frankly don't know how he views individual players.
And because of the situation that you mentioned that we're all living in right now, and the NBA season being in flux, I have to assume that also makes it a little bit more difficult for him in terms of making a coaching change, because you don't really know if the season is going to return in whatever capacity. and assuming that he would fire Jim Boylan, like then who do you put on the sidelines like for like maybe the last five games or of the regular season, if the regular season is even to return? Like that has to factor in, I have to assume, in terms of his timing and evaluation period of the coaching staff.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody, again, wants a definitive decision on Jim Boylan because he's a very polarizing figure. Right. Here's, to me, where the story is, and really there's not much more to it than this. This has all been reported. The Reinhardts like Jim Boylan. Arturas doesn't know Jim Boylan. He has said he's going to take some time to get to know Jim Boylan. Obviously, he's aware that his owners like Jim Boylan. Do I think at some point Arturas is going to want to bring his own coach to the Bulls? I don't think I'm going on a limb by saying that most executives like to have his or her own coach in place. John Paxson fired a very close friend and former teammate in Bill Cartwright in 2003, 6 months after he got the job, and replaced him with Scott Skiles. Do I think eventually Arturas is going to want to have his own coach in place? Yes, I do. When that's going to happen, or could Jim Boylan impress Arturas and stick around for a little bit? That's also possible. I understand the world we live in. We want definitive answers right away. Yeah, it's just I don't think there'd be a definitive answer even if we weren't living in the times that we're living in. But yes, you are absolutely accurate that I think the times that we're living in will, extend the process on that decision.
Yeah, and as I read some of your pieces, and as I understand it, like Curtis Jones has been hired from basically just having remote interviews. He has not yet made the trip to Chicago. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's in Denver. I spoke to him. He was on a conference call on Monday, and then now that I work for NBC Sports Chicago, we're the rights holders for the Bulls game, so they were kind enough to also do a video interview with just myself and Arturas on Monday later in the day, and he was speaking to me from his home in Denver. So what a time to be alive. I'm sitting in my house in Chicago, and he's sitting in his house in Denver, and we're doing a Zoom video interview of the new head of executive basketball operations for the Bulls. It's pretty mind-blowing the world we're living in right now.
So moving forward, obviously I just alluded to it a couple of minutes ago in terms of Arturas wanting to make the staff larger. And a lot has been said about making the scouting department, just increasing the volume of that. Is that just to basically say we want to cover every corner of the globe? Or is it just his thinking of his European upbringing and development? Like, what is basically behind that decision?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Bulls have had the same scouts in place for a long time, and it's a small staff. Again, I don't know about numbers. I think it's more probably just Arturas, overhauling it to more align with his vision or his contacts. I mean, it's pretty well documented how extensive his contacts are over the entire globe. And that, dates back to his, if you look at his resume, he's, a Lithuanian born player who starred in some of the most dominant European leagues and teams and story programs from Greece to Spain, to then working for the NBA league office on Basketball Without Borders, going into gyms in Africa, to then working as an international scout for the Houston Rockets. I mean, this is a guy who's going to be comfortable in any corner of the world, and obviously has contacts and trusted confidence throughout that global universe. So my guess is he'll align the scouting department with those contacts and those beliefs. And that's probably how he'll attack that moving forward.
So should Bulls fans, hold, if we assume that he is a very international minded, which, we just talked about here, would it be fair to say that moving forward, the Bulls are probably going to hold more draft rights for international players, you think? Or is that like just basically building on a thought process that where you basically are saying, I don't really know because he's doing things on his own way?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to sound like a broken record or make for bad podcasting here, but I really am not going to speculate. I don't speculate on people I don't know. I don't know Arturas. I've talked to him three times in my life. So I guess you could maybe answer that by going to look at the Nuggets drafting history, which he had, you know, say in what, during his time. They do have some international players on their roster, obviously the most celebrated one being Jokic. And I know he was very instrumental in that process. And, you know, anytime you get a MVP candidate in the second round, you're obviously hitting a home run in the draft market. So that's one feather in his and the Nuggets front office cap right there. You know, but at the end of the day, basketball is basketball. It doesn't really matter where you're from. There are no secrets in today's world. I'm, you know, we're doing a call right now. I believe you're in Denmark. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sitting in, you know, my house in Chicago, and I'm talking in a through a laptop to you. So there are no secret. You know, there's no more Jerry Krause and Eva Kadukin, you know, finding Tony Kukoc and stashing him away like they did, you know, when they drafted him in the second round in the 90s, early 90s. And even then, you know, Tony was known. I mean, it's just
he
wasn't as known as he would have been today. So, you know, everybody has access to the same information, but it's, to me, it's more the process and the detail with which you attack that information. And given Arturas's widely respected and extensive contacts throughout the world, the basketball world, I think that could bode well for the Bulls moving forward.
And even domestically, because the Nuggets didn't have their own G League affiliate. The Bulls do with the Windy City Bulls. So that's an avenue where I have to assume that you know, he will look at that as a major asset, having full control instead of shared control. Over basically a secondary team where he can put young players in and see them develop concurrently and make a decision based on that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point that I had not given much thought to yet, but you're absolutely right. I mean, the Nuggets are not in a controlled situation. The Bulls have done extensive work aligning their organizational philosophy with the Windy City Bulls. So that's certainly an opportunity, another avenue right there for, you know, Arturas and the Bulls to succeed.
One name I actually forgot to bring up earlier, and this is simply because I had someone reach out to me and ask, and I didn't have an answer. Doug Collins, what is his role within the organization at this point? Because he hasn't really been brought up a whole lot. And it seemed like ever since he was introduced a couple years ago, it's been very quiet on the front of, you know, what he does within the organization.
Well, it's actually pretty simple. I mean, he was always John Paxson's sounding board. And now that John Paxson is no longer the executive vice president of basketball operations, you know, he's not going to be needed in that role. Now, Doug has actually kind of been in the background even more so than usual the last few months. I reported that he and Jim Boylan had an incident in which there was a little bit of a falling out. So, you know, he's still on the masthead. He's still on the payroll. He obviously has a longstanding, deep relationship with the Reinsdorfs as well. But, you know, his advisorship was mostly for John Paxson. I don't even want to speculate on his future, but to me, it's such a small portion to the story.
Okay.
That there's not really much meat on the bone there. I mean, if Arturas is going to want a senior advisor, my guess is he's going to be leaning on John Paxson, not Doug Collins.
Interesting. Brian, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I mean, in general, I mean, we've touched on some specifics here about, well, we tried to at least, but it's totally fair, Casey, that you don't want to speculate on some of these moves. But like in general, what is Arturas's vision for the roster moving forward? I know Mort was mentioning that, you know, he's leaning toward like pass heavy, not favoring isolation players. But, you know, did he, in that introductory call/press conference that he had with you guys, did he lay out a vision moving forward for the franchise?
Yeah, I mean, that's not speculation at all, because he talked about how he likes to play stylistically and how he believes in, you know, team building philosophy. So yes, he believes in ball and player movement. He believes in pass heavy offense. He believes in multi-positional players in today's more, you know, leaning toward a positionless NBA. So he likes versatile players that can play and guard multiple positions. And I think the bigger takeaway from that is this kind of, to me, speaks to the Nuggets blueprint for success. You can't have strong ball and player movement and a read and react offense without familiarity. And the Nuggets, I think, have done a really good job of even though they have a young roster, of having continuity on that roster. And I think that's a big reason why they jumped from 30 to 54 wins. I made this joke on some other radio appearance, but like if the Bulls drop Nikola Jokic into a practice, you know, some of his passes would probably be bouncing off guys' heads because they wouldn't be expecting them. I mean, he's a wizard passing, and you know, a lot of that is because those guys are familiar with playing with him. So to me, that kind of, you can draw some overarching broader themes from how Arturis wants to play stylistically. To me, it almost demands continuity and familiarity with each other. You can't play a read and react offense unless you have that. So that would be one takeaway I would have from that. And then as far as organizational philosophy, I've already kind of touched on this, but he likes collaboration, but he also likes challenging. So he likes different viewpoints. And I think as he builds out this front office infrastructure, you'll see that played out with his future hires.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, big picture, I think one of Mort's themes that he's run with over the past couple of years is that, you know, Bulls fans weren't only frustrated with the previous regime, but at a certain point they became almost apathetic. Like, people just weren't as in tune with, like, they didn't feel the need to watch 82 Bulls games anymore because it was like, well, nothing's going to change. This is the same old story. Even 50. So, you know, now that they've made these changes and now that they have a new, they're starting to have a new organization in place, should Bulls fans be more excited moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to speak for how people's feelings are. I mean, you can ask a Bulls fan that. I mean, it's not my job to be excited or not to be excited. My job is to cover the team. I mean, there was a lot of people that were frustrated with the previous regime, and that previous regime is gone. So, you know, Arturis is undefeated, man. He's bat 1,000. He's, you know, there is quite a bit. I get all, you know, people at me on Twitter and emails. There is a lot of excitement and optimism around the fan base from the fan base, generally speaking. But, you know, no games have been played yet. So let's see how it plays out. But look, he's a respected and accomplished executive who is now getting his first crack, to me, that he's been working towards for a long time. So I think, given that combination with the intriguing young pieces on the Bulls roster, this certainly has the potential to start, you know, trending upward.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I would be remiss if I didn't ask this question, because when the news broke, I laughed for about 2 straight hours. It was the happiest I've been in quarantine. So it was, I think, the day they hired Arturis, I want to say like late on a Wednesday night. And on that day, the news broke that the Bulls were interested in interviewing Brian Colangelo, among others, for the position. And it was him and more. Who was the other one? Danny Ferry?
Yeah, Danny Ferry.
Was
also included.
Right. And those two names in particular, because Arturis was mentioned like the weekend prior, I want to say, as one of the leading candidates. And these two names came out and all Bulls fans were like, oh my God, what? So what do you have any intel, KC, in terms of the Bulls' rationale and wanting to interview those two guys in particular? Was it just that they're like NBA lifers and they're really doing their due diligence, you know, throughout as many names as possible?
Well, actually, it was a pretty short list that Michael Reinsdorf settled on. And, you know, I think the Danny Ferry interview, I don't think I know because I reported it, you know, happened a while ago. It wasn't really part of this formal interview process. So I think it was more of an informational thing or a fact-finding thing. You know, Danny Ferry had a, you know, awful incident happen, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I know personally how much that deeply affected him. And I also know Luol Deng personally, you know, and publicly forgave him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Danny as an executive, you know, I think a lot of people would agree had some decent success. The Colangelo one, you know, I don't know. I never asked about that. This is one time I probably will speculate. I'm not big on speculation. The NBA is a political place, man. And, you know, Jerry Colangelo and Jerry Reinsdorf have been close friends and mentors colleagues for a long time. perhaps there was some, you know, something there that led to that interview. Brian also obviously had a difficult fall from grace with some circumstances, you know, somewhat out of his control. Also made some moves that were celebrated in different, his different executiveship in different areas. But yeah, at the end, you know, when the formal process began, it was pretty locked in. You know, Justin Zanuck, the Jazz GM, and Arturas were the ones that were kind of getting the more formal interviews in the formal process. There were also some people that they wanted to talk to that they either were denied permission to or didn't have interest in speaking to the Bulls about. But, you know, Arturas has been linked to this job for a little bit. So, you know, I know Michael has been intrigued and impressed by him leading up to the formal interview process. And then it moved pretty quickly once that happened. Hmm.
Yeah, so in regards to Michael Reinsdorf, he was really on the ball of this one. I mean, there was an article. I don't even know if that was you who wrote that. My apologies. There have been a lot of articles out in recent weeks that he basically made like 200 phone calls immediately as the whole process began. Like he's been on this thing from basically when Pax kind of told him, you know, we need a change. And then he picked up that ball and ran with it. So do you know how early in the process did he kind of singled out Arturas as someone who would be of interest moving forward? Was that very early? And if so, how far back are we talking?
I don't have a specific timeline, but you are right in the sense that this has been going on. You know, the news broke on the night of the All-Star game. Joe Colley from the Sun-Times first published an article. We had an article up shortly after that, because basically everywhere you went on All-Star weekend, when the whole league is in one place, you heard, wow, man, the Bulls are out there doing background on people. I mean, that I heard that from agents, executives from other teams that I know. I heard that several places I went throughout All-Star weekend. So that's when news broke, but you're absolutely right in terms of your original timeline. I mean, Michael's been working on this for a long time, you know, presumably from that December meeting that Jerry had with John Paxson and Michael, where John basically said, we need to change here. And he's been doing a lot of due diligence and background on a wide variety of candidates. I don't know specifically when Arturas first came up, but I know for a fact, because Michael said it on the conference call, that Arturas' name came up a lot from a lot of different people. So that's why it's no surprise that we are where we are.
How much did the Bulls' young roster and the fact that they aren't in cap hell or have traded away all their picks, do you know, you know, how much that affected, you know, Arturas' decision? Because the Bulls' job, when you look at it from a global scale, like just the Bulls' brand, you know, despite recent struggles, this is a tremendous brand in terms of one of the most recognizable brands on the face of the earth, actually. How much of that played in, and in part, like how much did Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, you know, the young players, like the fact that this wasn't a team that is capped out and doesn't have their draft picks and actually have a young core in place, did that play a part? Is that something you know?
Yeah, that was actually my first question, Arturas, the conference call, is what appealed to you about this situation? And you touched on a lot of it. I mean, it is amazing. I mean, he's been a finalist for some other lead executive jobs and either went back to Denver because of a promotion or didn't get the job. It is amazing that he's got this job, because he talked about that Bulls brand and that international reach. I mean, this is a guy who obviously felt that impact as a kid growing up in Lithuania, as he put it, you know, growing up in the world of Michael Jordan. So it's partly the Bulls brand. It's partly it's an appealing situation. It's obviously partly because it's his first chance to be a number one. You know, I reported a story with Tom Habistro, our national NBA reporter for NBC Sports, NBC Sports, you know, in which you just, you know, we both had executives talking about how good of a job this is. I mean, their books are clean going into 2021 after, you know, for that offseason when it's much ballyhooed free agent class. They have all their first round picks. They have some intriguing young pieces. They have incredibly top-notch facilities. It's a wonderful city and a major market. And, you know, they have the history and the global brand. So there's a lot to me that's attractive about this situation.
Yeah, that I would agree. I guess trying to think what else about this situation. Yeah, I mean, you've done a great job explaining really like what drew Arturas to there and what we should expect moving forward. So more, unless you have any final questions here, I guess, KC, if you have any like final takeaways for Bulls fans about what to expect moving forward.
Difference, change. That's how we expect moving forward. So there you go.
All right. Well, that is a good place to wrap up. So, Casey, thank you again for joining us today. One more time, please let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work.
I'm at Twitter on KCJ Hoop, and all my writing is at NBCSportsChicago.com.
Very good. Well, thank you again, Casey. Best of luck. Stay safe. And hopefully you get some time off soon. I feel like you are the one person actually working during quarantine, which is probably both good and bad.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it. Take care.
Yeah, take care. You too.